supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we got one of them jam-packed shows for you, ladies and gentlemen. In the question of the week, we'll be revisiting the topic of wood mulch. What is it good for? The answer is not absolutely nothing. No, it ain't. We'll tell you how you should use wood, especially from your own local trees, later on in the show. We're also going to discuss the Delaware Center for Horticulture's hugely important program training recently released offenders to rejoin society with job-ready horticultural skills. Very important work. So we better hop right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Elsie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike, for taking my call.
Well, thank you, Elsie, for making it. How are you?
I'm great. In Princeton, New Jersey.
Gotcha. Elsie was my grandmother's name. What can we do for Elsie in Princeton?
I have a hydrangea bush that I planted 15 or more years ago. Every year, I'm unsure of pruning it. So by the time I think about pruning it, it's starting to leaf out, and I don't touch it. And I get a lot of blossoms on it, so it looks great, but I wanted to know when and how the best time is to prune it.
Hydrangeas are not four-season plants. That is for certain. So I want you to know that you have been remarkably intelligent so far, including the fact that you started out by saying you're confused about when to prune hydrangeas. One of the big epiphanies we had on this show is I was always wondering the same thing myself. And we finally got an expert on that a friend of mine had assured me was like the world's leading expert on hydrangea pruning. And he famously started his interview with me by saying, "I don't know a thing about pruning hydrangeas. I used to think I did, but every year they proved me wrong." And so we talked about it, and, you know, some hydrangeas bloom on old wood, some bloom on new wood, but they're always doing tricks. This guy told me a story about a hydrangea that was absolutely all the books, all the articles, all the experts said blooms on old wood, last year's wood only. And it was outside his office window, and a kid ran over it with the lawnmower and just sheared it back to the ground level. And he yelled at the kid because he realized, you know, the kid had cut off any chance of flowers. And he said it bloomed like crazy that year, made a liar out of everybody. So what we have come up with is a kind of a simple technique that, if you think about it, is just common sense. But it requires what you've shown so far, which is some patience. Right now, really, the only thing we should be doing with hydrangeas is if we're sick of looking at those dried seed balls. They can be pulled off or pruned off. But just the very tips. Don't start pruning any actual branch material. It's always good to prune off the faded flower heads at some point. This is a good time of year to do it. It'll draw less attention to the plant. And now you have the old wood. And by now, you're seeing green shoots coming up out of the base of the plant.
Right.
So very important now to restrain yourself. Do nothing. This is a great time of year to prune roses, to go out and cause damage in other parts of your garden. And then wait until the flower heads form, until all of the blooms that are going to form for the summer have made themselves obvious. They don't have to be full size. They can be about halfway size, but the longer you wait, the better. And then when they color up, when they reveal if they're going to be blue or red or maybe in between if you're playing with the pH of the soil, then you get your pruners and you go in and you remove any branch that you want to that is not flowering.
Okay.
You wait until the branches tell you which ones are fruiting branches. And when that is decided, then you can cut away anything else you want. And what that does is it makes the flowers much more visible. but you haven't possibly reduced the number of flowers. You just get rid of all these branches that are in the way of flowers. You don't have to take them all out. You know, sometimes you want a couple of branches in there to support those big floppy heads.
Mm-hmm.
But once those big floppy heads have formed, then you can take out anything that's obscuring the view. And the great thing about this technique is when you're done, it looks like you had twice as many flowers. And other than that, really just leave them alone.
Oh, that is terrific. Thanks so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Elsie. That is a great question. You probably helped save many hydrangeas this year.
I hope so.
All right, you take care and have a great summer.
You too. Have a great show.
I will. I'll have a great show in the summer. I'll do both.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Brother Darrow, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, I'm down here in the Blue Ridge Mountains, about 20 miles west of Asheville.
And are you a Christian brother, so to speak, or is that just your nickname?
You know where it comes from, Mike, is the Bob Newhart show, Brother Darrow and my other brother Darrow.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, and that's just my name, and I thought, well, that's one way to put it so that people remember my name, Darrow. So that's me.
All right, very good. And you say you're in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah, I'm up in the mountains. I'm about elevation 3,500 feet south-facing, very slopey, about a 45-degree slope. Been on the property about 2 years, and I got about a half a dozen old apple trees that need pruning.
Right.
Some of these guys are really leaning,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering, can I, like, pull them back, you know, where if I stake them and take some garden hose and put tension on it and keep pulling on them, can I get some of them to come back vertical?
I would not try. Let's back up here. So no pruning has been done?
Not yet. No,
okay.
That's what I was going to ask you about.
Now, apple trees are supposed to be pruned every year. You can prune them anytime from the late dormant period in the winter through the time when they're flowering to right after, but you're at the very edge. You need to get out there, and you need to remove one-third of the living branches. Do you have dead wood in the tree?
Most of them are alive.
So here's what you want to do. You want to remove a third of the branches, and as our friend Lee Reich is so famous for saying, you want to remove the branches to open up the center of the tree to airflow. You can't do this all in 1 year. It's going to take you a couple of years to get these puppies under control. But 2 or 3 years from now, when you're done pruning, Lee says you should be able to take a cat and throw it up into the openings between the branches so that the cat will come back to the ground without touching a branch.
Should I cut the branches that are sticking up at the verticals?
Yes.
Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Branches that are going straight up will not produce fruit. So you want to remove branches that are crossing, that are going straight up, and that are just being crowded, creating crowded areas. But then your real work starts. Apple trees are not self-thinning. An apple tree will produce like zillions of little fruits. And it doesn't care about the quality of the fruits. All it has to do is get one or two fruits to full size with some seeds inside, and it's taking care of its mission. To trick it into producing the kind of quality fruit that you want, you have to remove, after you're done pruning, obviously the little fruits will begin developing. When those fruits are about the size of a marble, you need to go into those trees and remove, sorry, man, 3/4 of the little fruits.
Wow.
You'll be filling 5-gallon buckets. It makes you crazy. It makes you sad. You're looking at this bucket going, I'm throwing away hundreds and hundreds of pounds of apples, but you're not. If you did not do the fruit thinning, you would not get good size, finished, high quality apples. And you're going to discover that you probably have a couple of pests or diseases in your area. This first year that you're going to work the fruit, if you do the pruning and the thinning, I encourage you not to really do anything else. Allow the apples to produce, to get to the full harvest size. And then when you harvest them, you'll notice what any imperfections are. You'll see if there's any kind of disease or there might be little worms inside the centers of some. and then you'll know what to do to protect yourself the following year. If you just want to do one simple thing, you can buy a product called Surround. It's a clay spray. You mix it with water, you put it in a sprayer as directed, and you spray the entire tree with it, and it's a marvelous protection against disease or insects on fruit trees. And it's completely non-toxic. It just coats them with a little bit of clay so that insects don't like the feel of it. If you do those three things, if you prune, thin, and then spray with Surround, you have a high chance of getting an enormous quality apple off that tree.
Will do. I'll cut them back, and I'll check back with you in the fall.
All right, brother.
Hey, Mike, you're the greatest.
Yes, I am. All right, you take care, sir.
I'll let you go. Bye-bye, Mike.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll be doing a very special talk on the best ways to turn your yard and garden waste and all those stinky scraps from your kitchen into garden gold at the Burlington County Earth Fair in historic Smithville Park on Sunday, June 22nd. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with the good uses for wood mulch, a program helping ex-offenders reenter society as trained horticulturalists, and lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for WHYY's You Bet Your Garden is made possible by Burpee. Burpee can help do the gardening for you with garden-ready plants, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, herbs, and more, delivered at planting time in your region. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com. And Star Roses and Plants, the company that introduced the knockout family of roses. Drift roses are low-maintenance, disease-resistant, and hardy to zone 4, a cross between full-size ground cover roses and miniature roses that bloom all season. More at starrosesandplants.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up late in the show, we are always warning you not to use wood mulch near your home or your car to pile it up around plants. Well, when we get to the question of the week, we'll tell you what you can and should use your wood mulch for, especially a certain type of wood mulch. We'll also take many more of your fascinating phone calls. As promised, it is time for a very special interview. We're going to be talking to people from the Delaware Center for Horticulture who are doing the Return to Work Green Jobs program for people who are getting out of prison to give them good work in the community. So today we have with us Patrice Sheehan. She is one of the managers of the program at the DCH. and Mr. Bob Harris and Mr. Floyd Backus, who are both in the program. Patrice, get us started. Tell us how long the program's been functioning and how many people have passed through it.
We are currently in our fifth year of this program, and generally we have two programs a year in the spring and the fall during the planting seasons. We have graduated 37 ex-offenders from this program, and it involves at half a day of training per week, and the rest of the time it's hands-on planting trees. It started initially, but since then we have broadened into public landscapes as well as community gardens.
And this is run by the Delaware Center for Horticulture in Wilmington, which is a great organization. Is this a Delaware-only program? Was this adapted from someone else's program, or are you a model that you hope other states are going to follow?
I think we are a model, and we actually received a national award from the Arbor Day Foundation, and it is for innovative education. So this is, I believe, the only one in Delaware that focuses on green jobs training.
Bob Harris, you are a graduate of the program. Is that a good way to talk about it?
Yes, sir.
And what was making this transition like? What were you thinking about your last days before you got out and what your plans were going to be? Had this been offered to you as a possibility? Had you always been interested in horticulture?
I grew up in a family where we always had a garden, and even when I got grown, we had a garden at my house. When I was in the program, I went to work every day like I was trying to get a job, and I was very successful because DCH hired me after I graduated from the program, and I've been there since 2010.
When you're in the program, are you still in prison? Are you still in a halfway house? Have you merged back into the community?
Me personally, it was the Plummer House, Plummer Center, which is a what they call in Delaware a level 4 facility, which is work release. So I would leave there every morning, get on the bus, and come to DCH to work. And in the evening, I would do just the reverse and go back in, and I would stay there at night.
Were you looking at this as you know, not only a potential release date coming up for you, but a new future?
Yeah, I was, because it was something that I was always interested in. I just hadn't had the opportunity to have the variety of training that they offered to me at DCH. You know, we worked on the farm. We built planting beds, learned how to trim trees, learned how to trim bushes, you know, stuff that I wasn't exposed to. So it was good information, good knowledge. And now I'm teaching people that were in a situation I was in, I'm teaching them how to do it on a daily basis.
And Floyd Backus, so what was your situation?
My situation was similar to Bob's, Robert. The Plummer Center, I came from the same exact place. It's a transitional, you know, halfway house to, you know, transition back into society.
Did you always have a background or any kind of interest in plants, or did this, you know, just suddenly become available to you?
I didn't have an interest in horticulture at all. I didn't care about plants. I didn't care about flowers or trees. I just, you know, it was just like, I don't know. It was a job opportunity for me.
And know? Now?
And now it's become a lifestyle. And I started out in the pilot program, which was the first program that DCH was offering to ex-offenders. And when I started, we planted over like 200 trees. And like Patrice stated earlier, they have an education program, which part of the day, the morning time, is education. They teach you about planting and pruning and, you know, watering and different things like that. And then the second part of the day, we will go out and actually do the physical work.
And Patrice, that's probably where you can tell who's going to succeed in the program and who doesn't, because there's, you know, my personal feeling is there's very little you learn about plants in a classroom, and 5 minutes outdoors actually doing the thing is not only much more valuable for your future skills, but it tells you as a person whether you're really going to like doing this or not.
That's true. It's one thing to learn about biology in a book, but to go out there and plant trees and other plant materials is, I think, really brings it home. And plus, whether you really want to be out there in all kinds of weather and conditions, and it's physically demanding.
How well are we doing at even getting people beyond that, about getting them working for landscapers, local nurseries, greenhouses?
The hard part is finding them jobs, because DCH cannot employ, you know, everybody who comes through the program.
And they shouldn't. These people should be welcome at the other horticulture jobs in the area.
Well, it's been challenging. It's been real challenging. I've stayed in touch with a few people, and they call me periodically to ask me if I have heard of any job openings. And, you know, so it's a struggle even going through the program once you get out to find employment.
Floyd, is that true? Is it harder to actually get the work than to acquire the knowledge?
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. It's definitely hard to get out and get other employment besides DCH. A lot of companies are not, you know, acceptable.
That's the first thing anybody asks you for a job. Have you ever been convicted of a crime?
Yes.
And
yep. I don't agree with jobs even asking that question, have you been convicted of a crime or a felony, because it discriminates against you. You know, it's kind of like the application asking you what ethnic group are you, like, are you, you know, circle white, black, Hispanic. I don't think applications should even ask that question, because it automatically gives you, you know, room to discriminate. And, you know, being a convicted felon, it's a strike against you automatically. So, you know, as opposed to, hey, I'm going to hire this college student or this guy who has a high school diploma over this guy because he's a convicted felon, we can't trust him. You know, they don't give you a second opportunity to say, hey, I'm an okay guy. I'm, you know, I changed. Everybody goes through stuff. So, you know, you just got to get up, man, and change. And you can change for the better, so.
Patrice, what do we need to do to let people know? Because first of all, I can tell you, you know, just looking over your training program, these guys are better trained than most of the people who are going to be offered to you as help for a garden center or a landscaping business. What does it take to get over that final hump, that fear, and accept the training and accept that people can change?
Well, we need to get the word out there that we have these trained people who know how to use landscape equipment. They know their plant materials. They know the proper planting techniques. They know about sustainable landscapes. They know how to build beds for community gardens. And we've even had some training in irrigation and first aid. I mean, whatever we have available, we try to get them well-trained, as well as in the kind of soft skills of, you know, how to be a good employee. And we have had some success. A local arborist has hired some of our graduates for their crew. Right now, we're working with a nursery that's interested in hiring some people. We have local supermarkets that have hired some of our people. So there are opportunities that I feel our graduates are well qualified for.
Floyd, it says here that in addition to working at DCH part-time, you're starting your own business?
Actually, I started my own business last year, so this will be my second year. I started in March. I went and got my business license and cards made up. And
so what are you doing?
So now when I get home from DCH at 3 o'clock, I I go to different residents and maintain gardens, do professional horticulture for different residents and stuff like that.
So pruning and you're doing it, man.
Planting, absolutely. It's become a lifestyle. I enjoy it, actually.
Well, I want to congratulate all of you on the successes you've had so far and wish you nothing but the best. This is so important that people be allowed to return to society, be treated with decency and respect, be able to have good jobs. I think you know I wish you the absolute best of luck with your program and with your individual lives. Bob Harris is working for the DCH in public landscapes and is the crew chief for Return to Work Green Jobs participants. Floyd Backus is working for the DCH part-time, then he runs his own business doing landscaping work at people's homes. And Patrice Sheehan is the tree program manager at the Delaware Center for Horticulture, who's helped coordinate some of the Return to Work Green Jobs training programs. Thank you all for being with us on the show today.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
We really appreciate it.
And now back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Corey, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, Corey. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am fine. Just ducky today, sir. Where is Corey?
Orr City, Texas.
Okay, so where is that?
We are about halfway between Shreveport and Dallas.
Okay, what can we do for Corey in Texas?
Well, we're about to move into our first house, and from the street, the lawn looks real good. It's nice and green right now, but when you get up to it, you realize it's all weeds and just junk. And I was wondering what the best way would be to get rid of everything. We grow a lot of San Augustine down here.
Right.
I was wanting to go back with the San Augustine, but I wanted to get rid of whatever was there first.
You said you just bought a new house, right?
Yes, sir.
So you got tons to do inside, right?
Yeah.
Do you really need a lawn that you're going to stand on top of, look down between your feet, and be demanding of?
Well, not immediately, but somebody called in, I believe it was last weekend. She talked about solarizing it, and it sounded like it took some time. I didn't know if that'd be a route we could go, something that we could do. I mean, I'm not ready to lay San Augustine down right now or anything. I figured it'd take a bit to get rid of everything that was there.
Here's the story. I mean, the first thing I would do, because you're in this new home, you got so much to do, I would try to see what kind of grass is out there. I know you said it's all, quote, weeds and junk, but there's probably some St. Augustine or centipede or Bermuda, something you can recognize out there. And so I would just cut what you have at 2 to 2.5 inches, which is the basic cutting height for warm season grasses. And see how you feel about it as you go through the season. If you are going to lay St. Augustine, this is the time of year to do it, you know.
Okay, well, we were probably going to plug it because we're, again, there's stuff to do inside the house, and we were going to do it for as cheaply as possible and just water the heck out of it and get it to fill in between.
Right, that's what people don't understand. It's one of the hardest concepts for me to get across. Here in the mid-Atlantic states, we have cool season grasses, bluegrass and fescue. They can only really be successfully installed at the end of summer and early fall. People who have warm season grasses like zoysia, centipede, Bermuda, St. Augustine, their grasses can only be successfully installed, you know, the middle of spring as we're going into summer. You really can't lay a St. Augustine lawn or certainly plug one in the fall because it's going to go dormant right away and the weeds are going to take over. Now, St. Augustine is a very aggressive grass. It's a very healthy grass. That's a spreading grass that's going to fill in quite well on its own, which is why you plug it like zoysia grass. So I don't think you need to solarize. St. Augustine is not known for giving way to weeds. It's not one of the clumping grasses that needs a lot of help. So when you're ready, my suggestion would just be till up what you have and keep raking away as much of the green stuff as you can and then level it out. Have a big load of compost or real high-quality topsoil delivered. Don't worry about a couple of weeds left here and there, and then plug your St. Augustine in Texas anytime from the 1st of May on. That would seem to be the ideal time. And I would think with your climate and its aggressiveness, by the time we got to September and it started to slow down, that lawn would be completely filled in.
All right. Now, will that work with the dandelions? Because there's a lot of dandelions in it. If I chop them up with a tiller, or anything I miss, is it going to take back?
You will have some things survive. That's why I'm saying you rake away as much of the green as you can. Dandelions are actually a cool season weed. So your St. Augustine, properly installed and cared for during that first year, will outcompete any dandelions. And then if you care for it correctly in the years to come, the St. Augustine will resist the weeds. It'll actually beat the weeds. It's that strong.
All right.
So if you're not up for doing this right away, plan to do it literally like a year from now.
All right. Well, that'll work, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind tomato growers to pull off the bottom leaves of their plants and bury the stems deep. Tomatoes, and only tomatoes, will grow auxiliary roots along that buried stem. Put a dozen crushed eggshells or some other form of calcium in the planting hole to prevent blossom end rot. Mulch with compost to prevent disease. And be sure and provide super sturdy support for beefsteaks, heirlooms, and other vines that typically exceed 12 feet in length before the end of the season. But don't go looking for all the details under the letter T in the Garden Answers A to Z section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with good uses for wood mulch and good phone calls from you. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for WHYY's You Bet Your Garden is made possible by Burpee. Burpee can help do the gardening for you with garden-ready plants, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, herbs, and more, delivered at planting time in your region. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com. And Star Roses and Plants, the company that introduced the Knockout family of roses. Drift roses are low-maintenance, disease-resistant, and hardy to Zone 4, a cross between full-size ground cover roses and miniature roses that bloom all season. More at starrosesandplants.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, it'll be time for the question of the week, a revealing one, a surprising one, in which we talk about, yes, there are good uses for wood and bark mulch. But you got to be careful, so you'll want to stay listening. And it's coming up right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Lynn, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, it's nice to be here, Mike.
Well, it's nice to have you here, Lynn. Where is Lynn's here?
I am from Claremont, New Jersey, which is Cape May County, the wonderful Cape May County in southern New Jersey.
So what can we do for Lynn in Cape May?
Well, I have a question, obviously, and that is, I know that it's always recommended that we can use farm animal manures, chicken manure, horse manure, cow manure that's well rotted. And I am new to gardening, and I've also owned horses for many years. Now, horses are always battling parasites, and good care of horses requires that you worm them with an anthelside every 6 weeks. And not only that, they might get antibiotics because they're ill. They might get hormones for different reasons and different medications, I'm sure, all farm animals. So I'm wondering, how does this translate into the manure?
Well, all that stuff comes through. And it's funny because you seem to know more about this than I do. I've ridden horses, but I've never kept a horse. And I know that they sometimes would need treatments for worms, and if they were sick, they'd be given antibiotics. But I thought the hormonal injections were just for farm animals that were producing, like the terrible growth hormones they give cows to make them produce more milk and things like that.
Well, actually, hormone therapy is a part of bringing on the breeding cycle with females, at least with horses. I don't know if it's used with cows, but hormone therapy is a part of that, too.
Okay, so the honest answer is all that stuff in animals and in humans comes through in the stuff we are, quote-unquote, finished with. That's one of the biggest problems with biosolids, which is the name disguising sewage sludge. Human pharmaceuticals resist the composting process amazingly well, as do animal pharmaceuticals. But I also want to drop you back a topic and a half and ask what you plan to use the composted manure for, because it really is not recommended for overall garden use, but for very different reasons than you're citing.
Mm-hmm. I would think to add nitrogen to the soil, and also to amend the soil, to mix it in with the compost that I do have going with leaves.
Well, I will tell you that one of the oldest uses of manure in my area of organic gardening is just that, is to take a little bit of fresh horse manure and mix it into shredded fall leaves to add nitrogen to help make the finished compost. Obviously, the cleaner the manure in terms of pharmaceuticals, the safer you're going to be. Now, if you're just adding small amounts of horse manure to a large amount of shredded leaves, that's the same as adding coffee grounds. That's just going to give you a slightly higher quality compost faster, and it's going to be well balanced. But if you use a lot of chicken or horse manure, you're right about the nitrogen, but it will only add nitrogen to the soil. So it's good for feeding non-fruiting plants like a lawn or sweet corn. Sweet corn traditionally does real well when it's fed composted horse manure, composted poultry manure. But if you were to use that, there's the classic people always misremember, oh, my grandfather used to feed his tomatoes nothing but horse manure. And that statement is actually horse manure, because if you do that, you get tomato plants that are 30, 40 feet high but only have one tomato on them, because nitrogen just breeds bigger plants, but it actually inhibits flowering. So manure is not a basic garden use. You have to use it carefully. Matter of fact, in the question of the week we have at our website about manures, that's the name of the article is called Using Manures Wisely.
Oh, I'm going to have to check that out. But the other thing that is, it's never pure horse manure. There's always bedding, an element of bedding, which can be straw.
And that's
really ideal because it composts well. And,
right.
And the seeds don't, I guess they die or something.
Actually, the word manure in this sense always includes the stuff the animal was done with and the bedding.
Oh, okay.
Because only with cows that are held captive in these terrible factory farms is the manure ever captured alone. With chickens, with horses, there's always a bedding. And so when that material is piled up separately, that is, you sweep out the stables and you make a big pile, or you sweep out the chicken coop and you make a big pile. When that stuff resembles finished soil, it is not compost. It's composted manure. And again, it'll feed your lawn brilliantly. It'll grow great potatoes. It'll grow great sweet corn, but not a good choice for tomatoes, peppers, or cucumbers or other fruiting plants.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You've given me a lot to think about. I appreciate
right.
it, and thank you for all the good work you do on your station.
Well, thank you for calling, and you have a great summer down in Cape May.
We will.
All okay. right, you take care.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Shoshana, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks.
So I live in Lafayette Hill, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And I have two young children. They're both almost six. And I really want to get them involved in planting and gardening, although I'm not such a gardener myself.
Okay.
And I live in an apartment complex that has just a little porch as an outdoor space.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering what would be the best kind of stuff to really generate as much actually edible stuff as possible, because I think that would be a cool experience for them. And I always kind of get stuck once I get a bean that sprouts a little green thing, and then at some point it dies, and it never really gets to those next stages of repotting and stuff like that. I'm wondering, what are the best methods for me to use in my given environment?
Well, for instance, what you just said, if you're growing like string beans, you don't mm-hmm. sprout them inside or repot them. You plant the seeds where the plants are going to grow because they don't transplant well. And they also don't do well in, like, yogurt cups on a windowsill and stuff like that. So you don't have any outdoor ground to plant in, correct?
Not ground, no.
Okay. But you have an area where you could put some containers?
Yes.
Okay, and what's the surface of this area? Is it a concrete slab? What are we talking about here?
It's probably not concrete, but it is a slab of some kind. It's like it's got metal railings on it, but light comes through. I mean, it's not like it's a
So it's indoors.
One big swath of no, it's outdoors. There's railing that would block a little light, but not really. And then there's a porch above it,
mm-hmm.
but it does get some light in the morning.
Okay, but there's like a roof that blocks the light at like noontime.
Yeah. There's a point in the day when it's not direct light.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really, if you're not getting 6 hours, it's really not enough light to grow plants in.
Oh, okay.
And that's really for the lesser fruiting plants, things like lettuce and spinach early in the season, maybe mm-hmm. string beans. But if you're going to try to grow bell peppers or tomatoes or something like that, you'd need more like 8 hours a day.
Okay, so you think I should go with like the leafier stuff?
Well, and they're only in the cool season. So, and mm-hmm. you don't have any containers yet, right?
I have some from previous years, but I haven't put anything in them because I've just planted some seeds in some temporary containers.
What kind of seeds?
Most of them are black-eyed peas that a farmer I know gave me.
Oh.
And then I have a little bit of herbs getting started. I think it's basil.
Oh, okay. Yeah, basil grows well from seed. You might be able to get away with the basil. The black-eyed peas, that was unfortunate. They're really a field crop that needs to be direct sown in the ground where they're going to grow, and they need a lot of sun.
Huh.
So what I would suggest is you organize your containers, don't delay, go out and get a nice soil-free mix, a nice clean potting soil, one that doesn't have chemical fertilizers or mm-hmm. water-holding crystals in it. And then put the containers where they're going to get the most light on this porchy area. And if you want, you could try sowing a quick run of lettuce. Lettuce is a cool season crop, but if it's only going to get so much light, and it's going to be protected from the afternoon sun, you should probably be able to get a couple of runs of lettuce before the weather gets too hot. But realize that when the weather gets too hot, the lettuce will bolt and not be
okay.
edible anymore. And then you can go back and grow those in the fall as well. As soon as the weather starts to cool down, then you can grow lettuce and spinach and pansies especially. It sounds like this might be a perfect place to grow pansies. But for the following year, really research what you're doing and the needs of the plants. And is there a possibility that there's a community garden in your area that you could join and you could grow outside and you could learn from the other gardeners around you?
I haven't really looked into that as a possibility. I may also have some friends who would be happy to have someone else garden their space. So I could look at that.
That would be the ideal situation, you know, have a community garden or a friend's house where you could go with the kids and really tend plants that are getting enough sun, that are in the right conditions. And I would also urge you to go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, and go to Garden Answers A to Z, read the articles on container gardening, and then seasonal planting, succession plantings. That'll teach you the different times of year that different plants do well.
Okay. Thank you very much for the advice. And I'm going to go out and get some lettuce.
And that comes up really fast from seed at this time of year. Just make sure you get good, clean potting soil for those containers.
I will. Thanks so much.
Okay. Good luck.
Bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Wood mulch, what is it good for? Actually, it's good for some things. Alexis Landis, You Bet Your Garden producer, read us this week's question, s'il vous plaît.
Sure, Mike. We heard from Muriel in Montgomery County, PA, who writes, "We lost some trees to storm damage, and I want to keep the leftover wood chips for mulching walkways in the backyard and between the raised beds in our garden. These areas are far away from the house, but your repeated warnings about wood mulches have made me cautious. What do you think?"
Well, I think she's perfectly described the most acceptable uses for wood mulch. And her material is vastly superior for those uses than any kind of bark or wood mulch she could buy.
Before I ask you to explain those statements, I have to say that her email is a refreshing change from the vast majority we get on this topic, which all seem to start out with, "I know you're against the use of mulch, da-da-da-da-da."
I think a lot of the blame for that misconception goes to the, quote, chipping industry. When landfills stopped accepting green waste decades ago, developers, arborists, and contractors started sending their trucks full of tree trimmings and wooden construction debris to chipping plants instead. Then landscapers so successfully sold the finished product to their customers that most people today think that the word mulch means wood or bark.
What does it mean?
Mulch is anything that's used to cover the surface of the soil to prevent weed growth and retain soil moisture. 30 years ago, wood mulch was fairly rare. You either had to flag down a road crew that was out trimming trees and beg them to dump their load at your house, or have an arborist leave the chips behind after you had a tree cut down.
And that's the kind of material you're calling vastly superior to store-bought?
Oh yeah, because at least it's real wood, and from local trees. There have been many reports of construction debris, including pressure-treated wood containing arsenic and creosote, being chipped up to make generic wood mulches, especially those awful dyed ones. Those nasty colorings can really hide the true nature of a dangerous wood. Anyway, our listener knows where her wood came from, and she's keeping it right on site. That's reuse, recycling, and a very small carbon footprint.
So your own wood is the best wood.
Absolutely. You should always keep any chips from your own trees, or even a load from a local tree trimmer, if you have the room and the appropriate places to use them in your landscape.
And her uses are appropriate, right? Keeping down weeds and pathways?
Absolutely. I've used wood chips from my own trees and local tree trimming crews to keep the weeds down in the lanes between my own raised beds. You could also pile the chips up a foot or two deep and use them as a killing mulch to try and smother something evil like a patch of running bamboo after you scalped it low to the ground.
Ah, but not within 30 feet of a house or car, because any wood mulch can breed the artillery fungus that stains those expensive objects with zillions of little tar ball-like spores.
Absolutely. And don't use wood or bark as a mulch underneath disease-prone plants like roses and lilacs for the same basic reason. Wood is the perfect incubator for fungal spores, including the ones that spread diseases like black spot. And always remember that no mulch should ever touch a plant. You always want the stem or trunk of the plant to be open to the air. piling mulch up onto a plant as opposed to around it invites rot, disease, and insects and vermin to nibble away undetected.
So every volcano mulch tree is...
Wrong, wrong, wrong. I want everybody listening to my voice to get up. Get up out of your chairs. Grab hoes, grab rakes, and go out and pull that mulch away from every poor tree you can save. And if anybody tries to stop you or ask you what you're doing...
Tell them you're mad as hell and you won't take it anymore.
And finally, never use any mulch right next to the foundation of a home. Keeping moisture in the soil next to your house creates a superhighway for subterranean termites to get right up close to your framing. Always leave a foot of bare, dry soil around the perimeter of your home.
Let's squeeze in a last question from Barbara in Saunderstown, Rhode Island, who writes, I've heard your warnings about using wood chips many times, but my husband has been cutting and splitting logs from an old cherry tree, and we have lots of sawdust and chipped up bark. Isn't there something we can do with it?
You can absolutely use the bark chips for pathways and weed control as we've specified, and you can mix the sawdust in with them. But don't use fresh wood of any kind, especially sawdust with its small particle size, as a mulch anywhere near plants that you want to survive. Fresh wood, again, especially in the form of sawdust, will suck all the nitrogen out of the soil and starve those poor plants to death. Well, that sure was a fresh look at wood chips now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to chip me up if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org.
Please, please, please tell us where you live when you email. Please, oh, it's so important, please.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Adam Staniszewski. Staniszewski, what a wine. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's internet illuminators. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and see what's new every day at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our editor is Al Banks. Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our production assistant is Marissa Nicosia. I'm well chipped up but never died, Mike McGrath, and I'll mulch back around to see you again next week. Did you get Whittle Baby Tweez and Shrubs for Arbor Day? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how to nurse those little seedlings into mighty oaks, or dogwoods, or whatever. Plus your fabulous phone calls.